Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Robert the Bruce, Extraction, The Willoughbys, and Defending Jacob. And I'm also going to be talking about a retro review of Warlords of Atlantis. But there's also going to be some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Gentlemen. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Now, there have been several movies that were slated for release this spring and summer that, of course, a ton of them have been pulled from release, and there's nothing coming out right now. But there are some movies that are showing back up on the release schedule, but they're going to on-demand platforms. Some of them, obviously, Trolls World Tour happened a couple weeks ago, but you also had Artemis Fowl. Disney announced it's going to be putting that on Disney Plus. I don't think they have a date for that yet. My Spy with Dave Bautista, that was going to be a theatrical release. That's going to, I believe, Amazon Prime. And there's a couple other ones that are sneaking off into other distribution outlets. The one that's interesting is Scoob, or, you know, as you could say, Scoob, because it has an exclamation mark in it. That is going to be getting an on-demand release on May 15th. And as I understand it, that's exclusively on demand. Now, I think this is interesting because it's a kids movie, just like Trolls World Tour was. And I think this is Warner Brothers saying, hey, let's see if we can duplicate what Trolls did. And as I understand it, the platform is going to be very similar, where you can rent it for $20 or $19.99 and you get it for 48 hours. I believe there's a buy-through option for $5 more where you can just buy it early. Now, of course, if you want to wait 2-3 months, it'll go down in price to probably, you know, I don't know, it could be like $20 or maybe even a little bit less to own it right out on digital. But for the rental, it's going to be that $20. I think they're playing around with the pricing structure and the pricing options earlier. But that's another major release that's going directly to homes. I think it's interesting. It's a cartoon. It's a kids movie. And I think that that's where they're playing around with it. Because look, you know, lockdown or not, even if you're going to be starting to remove some of the stuff for lockdown, you're still stuck at home in a lot of ways, and kind of every night's movie night. Another piece of release news is Parks and Recreation is reuniting the cast for a charity special episode, and that is going to be shot, that you shot that from home, and I'm assuming it's going to be like a Skype thing or a Zoom meeting with all the Parks and Rec people. They've done episodes like this. Of course, they did the movie Unfriended, and of course, there was, I think, a Modern Family episode where everybody was talking in their in a Skype chat, and so this is not that it's not been done. My son said to me, he goes, oh, it's going to be basically Unfriended. I said, hopefully fewer people die on the call than did in Unfriended. But that's taking place on Thursday, April 30th at 8:30 p.m., and it's going to be benefiting Feeding America's COVID-19 Response Fund. So it's good. It's for charity, and I believe it's going to be heading on demand like, you know, a couple days or a week later. I think maybe that Monday it'll be available to watch if you cut the cord and you don't have, like, the NBC feed. Another piece of news that's about a week or so old is there has been a confirmation that Sam Raimi is going to be directing Doctor Strange 2, The Multiverse of Madness, which is a great option. The first one was done by Scott Derrickson, and he did a fantastic job with that. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what Sam Raimi does with the material, especially since he was on the deck to do the original Batman, didn't get that job, and then did Darkman, which was a great comic book-ish movie in itself. And then, of course, his Spider-Man movies, I know Spider-Man 3 has its issues, and Sam Raimi was ready to quit the franchise at that point. But still, you know, first Spider-Man movie, that really put things on the map. I mean, even more than X-Men, Spider-Man showed that you could have a huge movie. And I want to see what he does with sort of that modern sensibility 20 years later. And then finally, if you are interested in some of my short stories, I was talking about my book, 13 More Turns, which is available on Kindle. And of course, my other anthologies, 13 Turns and The Ghost Readers and other stories. I also have a novel called Underbrush. Those are all available in the Kindle store. But I have put one of my short stories, and it's from The Ghost Readers. I've given you listeners an audiobook format of it, very similar to what I did with a story called Bedridden a year or two ago, which I dropped onto my podcast feed. It's only 10 minutes. This story is pretty short, but it's only 10 minutes. So you can go on the podcast feed. You can download it, listen to it at your leisure. It's a satire of politics. And it's interesting. It's actually, I wrote it decades ago, and it's still relevant today. And it's not heavy-handed politics. Look, I'm not going to like be pointing fingers and all that sort of thing. It's a fun little silly jaunt of a piece. So I hope people enjoy it. So you can listen to Nanopolitics on the podcast feed, or you can go get one of my books from the Kindle store. You can find a link. Just go to fatguysatthemovies.com/books, and you can get all of that. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to touch on is Valley Girl, which was originally going to come to theaters, but now it's getting an on-demand digital release on May 8th.
Want to get out of here?
Where would you want to go?
Anywhere.
What would you want to do?
Anything.
He's bad news.
We don't date guys like that.
Maybe that's good for a change.
Why are you doing this?
Those rich people are gonna hate you.
This is a remake of the movie Valley Girl from the mid-80s. I think it was like 1986, I want to say. And that movie starred Deborah Foreman and Nicolas Cage, in a very young Nicolas Cage. What's so odd about this movie is Valley Girl became a term in the 80s of not just I think now they kind of make it into the pop wealthy girl, but there was a certain thing with the Valley Girl, the way they spoke in the 80s and the way they dressed and the way they acted. It's basically a rich girl and a poor kid getting together and having a romance. And I don't know how you make this movie outside of the 80s, because I'm sure the San Fernando Valley still existed. But there's something very 80s about a Valley Girl. And what's so bizarre about it is they've got Alicia Silverstone playing the mom in this one, who flashes back to when she was younger as a Valley Girl. I have no idea what century this is taking place in, quite literally, because Alicia Silverstone plays the old version of the Valley Girl and Jessica Routh plays the young version of the Valley Girl. These women are about 10 years apart in actual age. Alicia Silverstone's in her early 40s. Jessica Routh's in her early 30s. So how old are we supposed to believe this mother is? Does this take place in the 80s or the 90s? And I don't know. I'm having trouble wrapping my brain around it. It looks like it's a cute romance. That's what the first one was. I'm trying to separate what a Valley Girl meant in the 80s. And it's difficult for me. But I'll check it out. Why not? I like Jessica Routh. I think she's cute. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Capone, which again was going to have a theatrical release, but is going on demand on May 12th.
Do you know what the difference is between Adolf Hitler and Al Capone? Hitler's dead. Capone lives like a king in Florida.
He has full-blown dementia.
I have reason to believe it could all be an elaborate act.
What's this about?
We have information that your client may have tucked away a very large sum of money.
Guys like you own this place $10 million.
It's gonna go on rampage.
This is Josh Trank's version of the Al Capone story starring Tom Hardy. I'm not a huge Josh Trank fan. I know he had Hot and Cold because people loved what he did with that superhero movie Chronicle. I hated it. That found footage piece of garbage was terrible. But then he did the Fantastic Four, and that thing was total hot garbage, and nobody liked that one. And he got in some Twitter fights and that sort of thing. Although this Capone trailer looks kind of interesting. I'm curious to see the Tom Hardy all-in performance that he usually gives in a film. So I'm kind of looking forward to this one, and I'll probably cover it the week after I do Valley Girl. So both of those look kind of interesting, and I'm looking forward to them. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Robert the Bruce and Extraction. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Robert the Bruce. This kind of sort of not really sequel to Braveheart shows Scottish King Robert the Bruce as he bonds with a family aligned with the English crown.
Robert the Bruce, you want the one thing you cannot have. To be William Wallace. To be loved as he was. And that is why you will not become King of Scotland.
Any man who breaks the head of Robert the Bruce shall receive 50 gold pieces.
That is a reward.
We'll have it for ourselves.
I didn't even realize this because it's been a while since I've watched Braveheart, but Angus McFadden played Robert the Bruce in Braveheart, in the original Braveheart. And I was talking with a friend of mine, Edward Douglas, who's a weekend warrior. He's another film critic. And he knew more about the history of this film. Because he follows the development. I don't follow development of films all that much, mainly because a lot of stuff goes in development and never gets out. Or it goes in development and changes, and I just rather know what the movie is by seeing the movie. I don't want to know the sausage factory process that went into making the movie until maybe after I see it. And apparently, McFadden had been trying to do a sequel of sorts to Braveheart. Obviously, William Wallace isn't in it, because spoiler alert, he dies at the end of Braveheart. But he wanted to do a movie about Robert the Bruce. And of course, Robert the Bruce is a big Scottish king character. And they actually did a movie with Chris Pine a couple of years ago called Outlaw King. And I think it just went straight to Netflix. And that one was okay. I covered it on this show. The problem was Chris Pine really didn't capture the Scottish nature of, well, anything, really. I mean, Pine just feels like that American actor who looks good, and he didn't feel like a Scottish lord or anything. I will say this, Angus McFadden certainly fits the role of Robert the Bruce. He played him in Braveheart. But I think he'd been knocking around wanting to do a Robert the Bruce movie, and it just never came to pass. And they finally got it up and running. And even though they've tried to tie this movie to Braveheart, it's really not a sequel. It's a very, very different movie. It's a much slower burn. I mean, Braveheart had these big epic battle sequences and this roaring soundtrack. And I mean, it was an epic movie. It was an award-winning, amazing film, and Braveheart is fantastic. This movie takes a very different approach. The story is, it's mainly about this family that lives just in the middle of nowhere in Scotland, and Robert the Bruce stumbles upon them at some point after being injured, and they help nurse him back to health, and it's dealing with the fact that the Scottish were at war with the English, but these people were aligned with the crown, but they also realize he's a human being just as they are, and it's one of those films that is supposed to supersede the politics of the day and supersede the Scottish versus English motif that's in there. Now, overall, the acting's fine. It's just, it's kind of a dull movie. I mean, most of it is people sitting in this cabin or shack or outside of it talking. And there's some battle sequences and there's some sword fights and that sort of thing, but they're few and far between. And they certainly are not at the epic level of what you saw in Braveheart. So, I mean, it's, if you're really, really into Scottish history, you might like this. And of course, it's a beautiful looking film. I think they filmed it in Scotland. And in fact, the very ending of it, it has this beautiful, gorgeous helicopter shot of the Scottish Highlands, and it's just gorgeous and wonderful. You see the mountains and the snow and the rivers and everything. But it's still a much more intimate character piece. And in fact, Robert the Bruce is probably only in it for about half the movie. A lot of it is building up who these people are in this cabin. And one of the things I always find hard to watch these sort of middle age, because it takes place in the 1300s. It's one of those that's hard to watch these because I do still come at it and say, well, it's still just a bunch of people living in some hut. Even like when I watched Mary, Queen of Scots last year or the year before, the one with Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie, I'm like, this is the pinnacle of life. You are the richest person on the planet, and you're still sitting around on a stone floor It's just you've got a couple servants around you. So it's a little hard to swallow at times. But still, like I said, if you're into the Scottish history, you might like it. For me, it was a little bit dull for me. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Extraction. Chris Hemsworth stars as a mercenary who needs to save the son of the biggest drug lord in India that was kidnapped by the biggest drug lord in Bangladesh.
This is an extraction.
So who are the players?
Biggest drug lord in India versus biggest drug lord in Bangladesh. It's a kidnapping. Drug lord's son. Clock's running at 16 hours. Proof of life is of 6 hours ago.
You want to survive, you do exactly as I say.
Something's wrong. City's on lockdown.
This is a direct-to-Netflix movie, and it used to be back in the day that if something went direct-to-video, it was lower-class entertainment. And yes, you don't get the giant blockbusters going to... I mean, you do a little bit, but you don't get the Marvel movies necessarily going straight to Netflix or Amazon Prime, although they are dumping a lot of money into these productions. Nowadays, it's different than what was on in the 90s. If it just went to Showtime or it went direct-to-video, VHS tape, these were usually cheaper, low budget, crappier movies. They've moved a lot of that to video on demand now, that a lot of things go direct to video on demand if they're a lower budgeted production. But VOD has become a great place for, like, you know, some horror films. There's some really interesting stuff going on with horror. Science fiction, not as much because you don't have the budget for that. But there's also comedies and like fringe, more niche markets work for on demand. But Extraction itself is a theatrical worthy action film with a movie star. Chris Hemsworth could carry this. And, you know, it has the Russo brothers attached to it as well. You know, of course, they did the Avengers movies. This film has all the action you'd expect from a movie like this. It's got the gunplay. It's got the blood. It's got the explosions. It also has a great 12-minute long one-shot action take. And those can be a little bit gimmicky, but they've done them in movies like, I think Atomic Blonde had one, and I know they had several one-take. Joe Wright does those one-takes every now and then. Those are fun to watch, especially when you finally realize that that's what they're doing. And you can go back and realize, you can find the original cut, and they hide the cuts, and they hide the shots that are assembled together with some digital trickery and with other filmmaking techniques. I can usually tell where the cuts are just because I have a trained eye, but still it's impressive to watch. The action's top notch, actually. And Chris Hemsworth comes across as a real brawler in this. And that's good, because I always question whether he would be able to do much outside of the Thor character in the Avengers. So I enjoyed this one. I mean, the plot's kind of throwaway. A lot of people have compared it to Man on Fire, where Denzel Washington's trying to save Dakota Fanning, who was kidnapped. And it is kind of, it's not a deep movie. It doesn't have a whole lot of thought process. It just has a couple cliches that it holds together, but that's what you get with an action movie. You see an action movie for the action, and you get it. You get the gunplay, the bloody action. It's an R-rated action film, and it's kind of a lark. So I'm going to have to say that Extraction kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Willoughbys and Defending Jacob. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with another Netflix release, The Willoughbys. Four children of a couple who are terrible parents attempt to send their parents away and become orphans, getting caught in a dangerous adventure.
All the Willoughby children ever wanted was to have a normal family, but their loving parents had no love left over for them.
Our parents are the worst. Just think about how great our family could be if they were gone.
How do you propose we discard of two insidious grown-ups?
So that's why the Willoughby children...
We shall craft a dangerous adventure.
...are sending their parents on a trip to die for.
Gas
Exactly.
Before I even talk about the movie, let's just talk about how Netflix is positioning some of their new content. Back in December, it may have been November, Netflix dropped Klaus, which was an animated film about Santa Claus. They were also fortunate to drop it in 2019, which was not a terribly strong animated film year. I mean, yeah, you had like Frozen 2, and but it wasn't like the year like Toy Story 3 came out, or it wasn't like the year that Fantastic Mr. Fox and Coraline came out. You were not bombarded with great animated content. Even the thing that Laika did last year, which I think was last year, The Missing Link, was a charming enough movie, but it wasn't at the highest level that Laika did. And Klaus got some real traction because Klaus was a great little animated film, but it went straight to Netflix. And Netflix had a great year last year with Klaus and The Irishman and Marriage Story, all these movies that were in their arsenal for award season. And Klaus really made me take notice of the fact that Netflix can distribute decent animation. And I'm a huge fan of animation. And especially now where people in lockdown, whether or not your state is foolishly opening things up prematurely, or if you are just self-quarantining, every night's movie night when it comes to the kids now. I mean, there's no activities. There's no after-school things. Heck, there's no school in a lot of ways. So every night is an opportunity for movie night. And we need more kids' content out there because Disney Plus, you can only watch Frozen 2 or Onward so many times. By the 512th time, you're like, okay, fine, let's watch something different. And Netflix is giving you that opportunity with The Willoughbys. The Willoughbys is not at the level of animation that you see from Pixar or DreamWorks, but it's got a nice, clever approach. It's got a darker approach, admittedly. You know, this whole thing where the kids are sending their parents on this dangerous vacation because they're hoping they'll never come back. I've pitched that idea to people in blurbing it, and I always get a weird reaction, and I'm like, yeah, I know it seems really dark. But see, the dark stuff comes the way, like, Roald Dahl would put dark stuff in his books. You know, you watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and that thing's nightmare fuel in some ways. And that's because it comes from Roald Dahl. And Roald Dahl always had that darker edge to it, and I always liked that. It's sort of like the Lemony Snickets, a series of unfortunate events. It's creepy, and it's weird, and it's at times disturbing. But kids can handle that stuff. Kids can handle dark concept as long as you produce it and make it in an appropriate, non-punishing way. Heck, look at Wizard of Oz. She lands a house on a person. That sort of thing happens in kids' movies and books all the time, where they're, you know, Wicked Stepmother in the, you know, all of the Disney movies ends up getting killed in a lot of them because she's so evil. So that's one of the things that makes The Willoughbys work, is that it is this whimsical kids movie with this dark set of teeth. And there's some stuff that's a little goofy in there, but it's fun and it's different. And the kids are, I mean, like, you got like Will Forte playing one of the Willoughbys characters. And like at one point they come to this candy factory, talk about Willy Wonka, and the guy who runs it, it wears a candy outfit, and he's voiced by Terry Crews, and it's very funny. And it has this surreal nature that doesn't exist in the real world that in a way reminds me of, do you remember that? And this is a weird movie, that Raggedy Ann and Andy movie came out in the 70s with this stuffed camel that was going through hallucinating events. That's what it reminds me of. There was a candy monster in that movie, and that movie's disturbing as all get out. And I finally found a copy of it. I got to watch it because it's so strange. But the Raggedy Andy movie, it feels like this is drawing from that weirdness, and the weirdness is what makes it kind of cool because it feels a bit fringe. It feels like something like Coraline, which is a kid's movie, but it's still dark and creepy. And that's what I liked about The Willoughbys, but it's also still fun and whimsical. And, you know, it's a feel good kind of movie. So yeah, I'm going to say The Willoughbys totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Defending Jacob. Chris Evans stars in this legal drama about a district attorney whose 14-year-old son has been accused of murder.
We have some bad news on the case. The print we lifted from the victim is from your son.
There's got to be an explanation. They go to the same school. Jacob's in his class.
Yes, we know that.
Lynn, have you arrested my son?
Before we begin, I want to make something clear.
A kid your age charged with first-degree murder is tried as an adult.
I swear, I didn't do it.
We believe you.
This is on Apple TV Plus, and like some series are doing now, and you saw this on Hulu, I think you saw this with Devs, and A Little Fires Everywhere, and most recently with Mrs. America, they'll drop the first three episodes as kind of like episode one, 3-hour monstrosity. And then they'll leak one episode out each week. And I think they do that because a pilot isn't enough to totally hook you, especially now where everybody's at home all the time wanting to binge watch anything. So they're dropping three episodes at a time to get you hooked on the show. Because part of the problem is a pilot, you don't get into it until you're in about episode three or four anyways. And that's the other thing, like with The Morning Show, which is one of the Apple TV cornerstone series, you don't even get to the setup until like episode three with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston being the co-host on The Morning Show. So Defending Jacob, you get the 3-hour opening, which is really, they're each about 45 minutes. So you're really getting 2 hours and 25 minutes. So it's kind of a long movie, but it gives enough of the setup and it gets you to the crux of the conflict being he's got to defend his son. Chris Evans is pretty good in it. I mean, Chris Evans is a decent actor, but he does sort of, he kind of plays the one note Chris Evans character in everything he does. He's not terribly versatile. So this being the dad who's conflicted, I mean, he's not like Captain America where he's that Boy Scout who always does the right thing, but he is just kind of playing a version of Chris Evans. Now, Michelle Dockery's in it. She's from Downton Abbey and she's decent in this movie. And the kid who plays their son is the kid who played the main kid in It. Part of the problem that does sort of get under my skin with this is I see sort of the already adversarial relationship between the parents and the son. And I'm like, I know that's going to come out, but you know, I at least I like to think I do have a better relationship with my kids. Certainly at that age. And they respect me more than to do the eye rolling bit that the kids do all the time in movies. The other thing with the series is it forces you to ask yourself what you'd do if your child was accused of murder. And especially if you had access to the case the way a district attorney would. You watch these court cases where you've got some horrible crime and the kid is clearly guilty, but the parents still stick behind him. And you wonder, would you be able to do that? And how would that work in your own mindset? And I think that's the biggest thing that this does is it asks you what you would do. And now, of course, there's some contravities as you get on later into the show because it's never going to be as straightforward as it's first presented. And there is a bit in this show about them just not facing up facts with each other. Everyone's got a secret. Everybody's got something. They're not telling anybody, even though they should. And that can get a little bit frustrating. But overall, it's a well-done show. It is very heavy, though, because it's about a 14-year-old up for a murder charge. So it does take some effort to watch it. But overall, it's pretty good. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Warlords of Atlantis and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Gentlemen. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment. And let's talk about a vintage movie. I've been doing this a lot lately. I want to pepper in, especially now that there's everything that people are watching is on demand. So it's not just new stuff you're watching. And I like to give people suggestions on what's new and keep them up to date and maybe find one show that's a new show or something that's been around or it's getting a release. You know, like a couple weeks ago, I talked about Future Man season 3. And while not a whole lot of people knew about that, it's a nice thing to say, hey, this is on Hulu, it's worth checking out. But I also like to encourage people to dip back into the archives and find some obscure or different movies that are available. And a lot of times you can find these, you may not find them on like Netflix, because Netflix doesn't really have older stuff. Most of the movies that Netflix has have been made in the last 10 years or so. But Hulu has some older stuff. Certainly Amazon, even if you don't do the Prime stuff, you can rent some older obscure stuff through Amazon or Vudu. And Tubi TV has a lot of really obscure stuff that goes way back into the 70s or even earlier. I've done elements from that. Like I talked about the Play Dogs 1 week, and I've talked about some other movies that are older films that are worth checking out. Now, this one is another one I'm dipping back into the archive, and there's a story about it. Let's just play the trailer first, and then I'll give you my own personal background with this movie. Warlords of Atlantis. Doug McClure stars as a 19th century explorer who discovers the lost city of Atlantis after going into the seas in a diving bell.
Back in the dawn of time, a strange traveler came from outer space and plunged beneath the sea. The discovery of a fantastic hidden metropolis under the ocean leads to spectacular action and thrilling adventure in Warlords of Atlantis.
Where are you taking us?
To safety.
Starring Doug McClure, Peter Gilmore.
We'll not find it on any map, but you know its name.
Atlantis.
When I was 6 or 7, this movie came out. And it showed at one of the theaters, and my dad took me. We would go to movies on Saturday afternoons all the time. And he took me to go see this movie. Now, 7-year-old Kevin was watching this and just loved the heck out of this movie. And I remember seeing the movie. I remember bits and pieces of the movie, even to this day. And I've always had a soft spot for it because I loved it as a kid. I thought it was a great film. Well, it kind of flopped in the U.S., and I remember my dad a week or two later was like, hey, what movie do you want to see? I go, let's go watch Warlords of Atlantis again. He goes, it's not at the movie theaters anymore. They pulled it. And I was shocked. I mean, shocked and horrified that they got rid of this movie that I loved so much. And over the years, I've been wanting to see it. Now, Doug McClure was best known for doing like, he was in The Virginian on TV, which was a Western. And he was known for a lot of sort of character acting through the 60s and into the 70s. But in the 70s, he started to work with a director named Kevin Connor, and they did a series of sort of rubber monster movies is the best way to describe them. They had sort of a Jules Verne bent to them. And they were actually quite popular in England. And you hear references to Doug McClure movies in things like Red Dwarf. The character of Rimmer references Doug McClure a couple times, especially at one point when they run into these giant rubber monsters. And they were done like with sort of like a Hammer mentality to them. In fact, one of them he does with Peter Cushing. And when they did Mystery Science Theater a couple years ago, they redid that. Joel Hodgkin said he wanted to throw a couple Doug McClure movies in there because they're cheesy and goofy. And they did. They showed like all of them, like At the Earth's Core and The Land That Time Forgot and The People That Time Forgot. I think there were like 4 or 5 of these movies right there at the late 70s. And they showed all of them on Mystery Science Theater except Warlords of Atlantis. And I've never been able to find a video release in America of Warlords of Atlantis. I think there was a VHS for the UK. I think there was a Laserdisc. And I think it is on Region 2 Blu-ray. But for whatever rights reasons, you couldn't see it. Well, I was finally able to track down a copy of it. And I watched it. And, this is a fun, goofy, giant monster, rubber monster movie. And it's just meant to be an adventure. But it's like watching Journey to the Center of the Earth or something like that, where it's completely unbelievable and silly. And you got, like, in this scene that they're going down this diving bell and a giant sort of Loch Ness monster type thing, its head goes in there and they stab it with an electrical cable. And then they have this scene at the end where the ship that they started off on is attacked by a giant octopus. And when they go down into Atlantis, there are these slaves and they're kept at bay by these monsters. And I remember there's one scene where a monster literally eats a guy. And I thought it was so cool and awesome. And it's absurd, it's silly, and it's very 70s, but gosh, if I didn't love watching this movie again. And I like the other Doug McClure movies. If you want to check those out, all those are on Mystery Science Theater. But for some reason, Warlords of Atlantis, it's never been released in America. And that's a shame. You can track it down. You can probably, I think you can find stuff of it on YouTube. You can track down the Blu-ray import or the VHS import. But yes, Warlords of Atlantis is a terrible movie, but I love the heck out of it. And it reminds me of my childhood, even though now I understand why nobody went to go see it. But still, I have to say Warlords of Atlantis totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is going to be on the movie The Gentleman. Multiple criminals in Britain fight over control of the marijuana trade before things become legal.
There once was a young and foolish dragon who came to ask a wise and cunning lion about acquiring his territory. Now, the lion, he wasn't interested. So he told the little dragon. The dragon, he persisted.
Oh, goody. He started a war.
So the lion took the little dragon for a walk and put 5 bullets in his little dragon head.
He's warming up now, isn't it?
There's a message in there.
I remember seeing this movie earlier this year. I think it came out in January, and it was before the coronavirus hit. So it was one of the last movies that was released. Like, right now we're getting the home video releases of the stuff from the beginning of the year. I think Bad Boys for Life is also out this week. That was in the beginning of the year. But The Gentleman kind of preceded the coronavirus and was able to run its course outside of the influence of that. Now it's on DVD and Blu-ray. And it's Guy Ritchie kind of trying to return to form. His underbelly of British crime is what put him on the map with movies like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatched. And this is him trying to get in that headspace again. Only the big difference with this one is instead of street thugs, these are higher class criminals. They are people who run criminal organizations and are well funded and dress in suits rather than looking like just sort of people running around running schemes and scams on the streets of London. You've got Charlie Hunnam running a group, and you've got Matthew McConaughey running a group, and you've got Hugh Grant coming in to try and negotiate stuff. So like a regular Guy Ritchie movie, they throw a lot of backstory at you very, very early on, and you really have to pay attention in the first half hour of the movie to figure out what's all happening, and there's a lot of twists and turns, and this person is set up to this, and this is tied to this, and this causes this. It is really, at times, a complex written movie, and at times, I would almost, if there was any fault really to this movie in terms of the biggest problem, is it's almost too complex. It's twisted in over itself so much that it's hard to, even if you pay attention, to figure who all the players are and how they relate to each other. And you got to remember this from that scene and everything. So it does get a little bit convoluted, especially near the middle. Now, when they finally get to the turn and they start unraveling everything, it makes more sense. But it can be very confusing for that first hour to an hour and a half. And that's a shame, because I think they could have smoothed that out a little bit better. Now, the Blu-ray itself comes with a couple special features. It's really not that big of a deal in terms of special features. They have basically three, and one of them is it's a behind-the-scenes documentary. There's one about the quips and the lines and the one-liners they use, and then there's a glossary about how they refer to pot and weed. So it's a glossary of cannabis, along with a photo gallery. So it's not exactly flush with special features, but it's a decent movie. If you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out, especially if you're a Guy Ritchie fan. I thought it was kind of fun, so I'm going to give this one a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also out this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Bad Boys for Life, The Turning, The Last Full Measure, Ip Man 4, The Finale, Like a Boss, 30 Rock, The Complete Series, and the Hammer film, The Curse of the Werewolf from Shout Factory. And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Normal People and Upload. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.